I'd like to talk about how to add part-time showers to next to leading order calculations. And I report on work I've done with Michael Kramer and some current work that I'm doing with Stephen Morena and Kramer. And I'll say just a word about a completely different project that I've got going with Zoltan Nagy, who talked earlier this morning. I've put down a few references. You see the references to work I did with Kramer. And very similar is Frizioni and Weber and Frizioni, Mason and Weber, who have done something that's closely related, has more to do with incoming hadrons, whereas we're just doing electron-positron annihilation, so we don't deal with the incoming partons. On the other hand, there's approach so far doesn't have massless colored particles going out every which way in the final state. I'm going to talk about electron positron goes to three jets, which has just that consideration. So let me say just a word about the idea of showers in the standard way, not with the way David Kassauer was talking about it. Here is a Born diagram for electron-positron goes to three jets. There's the final state. And what you say is your partons coming out each make a shower that's represented by this yellow diamond. And then what is a shower? You can think of it recursively. A shower is your gluon comes in, it splits to two gluons, and then each of those gluons makes a shower. Evidently, if you turn that into a computer program, it would run forever because you have to put in an N for it. So you just arrange that it stops after N steps or after the virtuality of your splitting becomes too small. So what does a program do then, the parton shower program like Pythia, Herwig? They produce a list of events which have, the way I've shown it, partons, lots of partons, but what they add in after that is hadronization. So in the end, you get pions, nucleons, rho mesons, whatever. And each event is just a list of those particles and possibly a weight for that event, so that you add up what happened in that event times the weight. The user then can analyze the simulated events with a user-defined function that says what I'm going to measure about it, and you get a prediction for that measurement. This kind of program originated in the 1980s, and some of the originators, I think the ones I would draw attention to are Thomas Galchok, Brian Weber, and Torbjörn Sjöstrand, who got this idea going. Originally, when it got started, I didn't think much of it. There's a black box, and it's only leading order, and well, actually, it's absolutely essential to the analysis of experiments. And without them, our ability to learn from the measurements at Tevatron, at the LHC, I think would be very, very seriously degraded. So now I've talked a little about parton showers. I'd like to talk about next to leading order calculations. So I have to tell you what's good about next to leading order calculations. Maybe that's preaching to the choir here. But here's an example. This is F3, the three-jet fraction in electron-positron annihilation calculated to next to leading order by my program. And here I just did it to leading order versus, well, there's a parameter, Y cut. So versus that parameter, here's the leading order answer, and I varied the renormalization scale by a factor of 2, and that generates an error estimate for how good that leading order answer is, so somewhere between here and here. And then I did it to next to leading order and got this red line and two other red lines that I get from varying the scale by a factor of 2. By the way, I chose my central scale to be the square root of s over 6. That's because there's 3 jets, so each jet has 1/3 the energy, roughly. And in PP bar goes to jets, empirically, it's turned out in my experience that the jet transfers energy divided by 2 is a good scale. So the jet energy here over 2 would be square root of s over 6. And I just varied around that. Here's the answer from pure out-of-the-box Pythia. I should note that to do a calculation like this in next to leading order in the standard way, you need to have a so-called infrared safe observable, and this jet cross-section, 3 jet fraction, is such an observable. So the idea of that, why is it good? I forgot to answer the punchline here. The error estimate on the red is better than the error estimate on the black. And that's standard, happens almost every time. And there's another thing I should have pointed out. Sometimes something new happens in next to leading order. And if you don't do it in next to leading order, you don't see that. That's happening here. You see this cross-section starting to dip when Y-cut is small. And that's because 3 jets can get turned into 4 jets by the algorithm when Y-cut is small. And if there's only 3 partons in the final state, you're never going to see 3 jets turning into 4 jets. So that's a new physical feature that's important for small Y-cut that you just need to do next to leading order to even see. So that's why next to leading order calculations are good. Why aren't they good? First of all, they're producing just final states with just a few partons, 3 or 4 for the case I was telling you. 3 at the Born level, 4 at the next leading order. Whereas if you use, say, Pythia, you get nice final states with lots of particles and their hadrons. So the same event would get represented that way in Pythia. And the real world, I may remind you, produces hadrons in the final state, not just a few partons. So it's a much more realistic final state, and it's a final state that you could give to a detector simulation program. Now let me look at the structure of the jets, and we'll find something else that's wrong. So let me look at F3, but differentiated, a differential in the mass of the jets. So it's producing 3 jets, the algorithm's picked out 3 jets. Let's look at the mass of the jets. I just sum over all the jets. So there's 3 jets. I didn't try to figure out just pick 1 jet. This is all 3 of them. Each one then contributes, each event contributes 3 jets to this plot. Here is the perturbative answer at next to leading order. The jets sometimes have a big mass, and the cross-section rises and rises and rises as the mass gets smaller. And then for mass equals 0, the cross-section has a delta function of mass times minus infinity. And if I integrate that over a little finite size bin against this increasing thing, I get a finite negative number in that first bin. So that's the representation in everybody's next to leading order program of the structure of the jets you're making. And evidently, it's not a realistic structure, and having minus infinity times a delta function is sort of an embarrassment. Here's what Pythia gives, pure Pythia, for the same thing, DF3, DM. And you see the jets are actually pretty fat and have a typical mass of like 7 or 8 GeV. So one would like to have something that's correct to next to leading order, but have a realistic final state in the sense that they're made out of hadrons and that the masses of jets is something reasonable. So how do you add showers? Well, what's the structure of a Monte Carlo program, either the next to leading order program or a Pythia or something like that? The thing you're measuring is you construct as a limit in which you run the program for a long time, so it generates n, where that's a very big number of events. And here's your measurement function, which is a function of the final state for the nth event, and just times a weight that your program generates. I might say sometimes the weights are all the same, but for next to leading order calculations, usually they're different. And as I showed you, some of the weights are negative. That's what a negative cross section in that first bin meant. If the observable is infrared safe, then this thing is going to come out to be a coefficient times alpha s to whatever was the number of alpha s's you needed to get the Born cross section, plus another coefficient times alpha s to the Born number plus one more, and then there's more coefficients. But the pure next to leading order calculation just has zero for the rest of these, and some other calculation would have C2, C3, C4, whatever. So what you'd like to do is fix your next to leading order program up so that it gives realistic final states, but if you expand it perturbatively, C0 and C1 are exactly the same as they used to be. And that's what Kramer and I have been doing, and that's what Frixioni, Nassan, and Weber have been doing. So here's a little picture for the calculation that I'm telling you about. And if I have time, I'll go into some formulas for it, but probably we don't have time. Here's the Born process, produces three partons. And I'm going to let each of those partons split according to a certain algorithm. That's where it splits and it has a Sudikoff suppression factor. And then each of the partons goes and makes a shower. Also, there's a soft gluon emitted. The soft gluon is emitted from the color structure of these hard three jets. So three jets going out, you emit a soft gluon with an Eichenholz approximation, and what this symbolizes is using that kind of Eichenholz approximation for the making that gluon, only not just purely the perturbative version, but an Eichenholz approximation with a Sudikoff suppression. So in the same spirit as these splittings, one particle splitting into two, this one produces a soft gluon times e to the minus something when that suppresses gluon being really, really soft. So this is a calculation based on the lowest order matrix element inside the green. We want to be correct in next to leading order, so we also include next to leading order graphs. So here's a next to leading order graph. And with the next to leading order graph, I've already included some of next to leading order from here, from these various splittings. So I keep track of that and have a subtraction on the next to leading order graph indicated here. This one I drew is a soft gluon subtraction that imitates what this graph here does when the gluon is soft. And that goes out because it's already in here. And then each of those partons makes a shower. So that was a 2-minute little presentation of the overall structure. Let me show you in just a little more detail. Here's the shower splitting. So here's some unknown rest of the graph that I don't want to show you. Here's a parton of quark coming out, and it splits. What does that mean in formulas? It means integrate over the virtuality of that splitting, integrate over a momentum fraction variable, integrate over an angle, and then here's the matrix element. That, for me, is the exact splitting matrix element for quark goes to quark gluon in Coulomb gauge. This whole calculation is done in Coulomb gauge. And R is the rest of the graph. And then it's multiplied by exponential of minus an integral of P. P is the integrand of the virtual diagram that goes along with this one, where the final state just goes there. The integrand of that in Coulomb gauge. So that looks a whole lot like what the Parton-Cheller Monte Carlo does, except this function and that function, although they agree with what anybody would use when Q bar squared is small, they're special, a little bit different when Q bar squared is finite.
Singular for Z equals to 1 times P?
These are singular when z goes to 0 and 1. However, the singularity is cut off when z gets smaller than what? L squared over m squared. L squared over q bar squared, something external. So that is a finite integral over z, which gets more and more singular as L bar squared goes to 0, thus leading to double logarithms in that exponent. The soft radiation, I mentioned in words, here's a little formula for it. It's a sum of Eichenholz kind of splitting functions, soft radiation functions for interference from radiation from leg I and absorption on leg J. And it's just multiplied by an exponential of basically minus the same thing. Okay, so here's a little test of whether that works. We wanted, let's calculate the ratio of next to leading order with the showers minus just pure next to leading order divided by the pure next to leading order for d sigma dt, the thrust distribution, let's say. We'll just pick that because that's was convenient to calculate. So that ratio should be C0 alpha s to the Born power plus C1 alpha s to the Born plus 1 plus more stuff divided by the next leading order, this C0 and C1 term, minus C0 alpha s to the Born, C1 alpha s to the Born plus 1. Well, those terms ought to cancel. So this ought to be alpha s to the Born plus 2 divided by alpha s to the Born should be alpha s squared for the first term in the perturbative expansion of that. And of course it's guaranteed that that's going to happen because the formula said it had to happen. But if anyone's ever written a computer program, you know that it never happens. So let's just test it to make sure this all works. And the way to do that is just to plot this function versus alpha s. So alpha s is a parameter you can dial. And let's just vary it and then see if we get a straight line. And there's the answer. Here's versus alpha s squared. I should have had some kind of a straight line for r. In fact, I do get a straight line, but its slope is indistinguishable from zero for reasons that I'm not sure. And I can also show you what happens if I leave out the next to leading order correction terms. In that case, I get these blue points, which you would expect to go like alpha s or square root of alpha s squared. So you expect something times a square root function, and that's what you got. So indeed, what should have worked in theory works when you implement it as a computer program and works even somehow better than you would have expected. So now let me show you the jet mass distribution. Here was the Pythia distribution for the masses of those jets. I showed you that. And now what we're going to do is try this program. Only it makes showers. I showed you making showers as a little diamond, the yellow diamond. Let's also take the showers thus made and send them to Pythia for hadronization. So take all those quarks, gluons, whatever they're coming out of here, and just let Pythia hadronize them and then do the measurement of F3 and measure the jet masses. And here's the distribution of jet masses you get. And you see it looks nothing like the original. It doesn't have a negative delta function times infinity at the origin. It has a nice reasonable shape with a peak at around 7 and more or less the same shape as the Pythia distribution. But just to see that, why don't I put one of those graphs on top of the other one. The Pythia normalization is quite a lot smaller than this one. So let's put them on top of each other, but divide by the normalization. And then here's the comparison. Pythia's red, the next leading order with showers with Pythia hadronization is the blue, and they're not exactly the same, but they're pretty close. I also wanted to look at the mass distribution, the jet mass distribution, out at large jet masses. Here it is, that's the red curve, or the red histogram, and I also took the purely perturbative answer, just next to leading order. And you might, and that's this green line, and out at large jet masses, all this showering and stuff ought not to matter. You ought to return to perturbation theory, and indeed you do. Those match. But of course, for masses less than about 15 GeV, there's big differences. Okay, how about the effect of showers and hadronization on the measured, the infrared safe measurement of just F3? So here, the dashed line is just pure next to leading order as a function of Y cut. If I now let the showering happen just at the parton level and I don't add hadronization, I get this blue curve. If I now let hadronization happen, I get this dash red curve, which was covering up the blue curve, so I put some holes in it. What you can see is the effect of doing all this showering is pretty small on an infrared safe observable. And that's a good thing. So just to illustrate a possible use of this sort of thing, I investigated the effect of the JET algorithm on F3. The algorithm I was showing you is the Durham or KT algorithm, which is certified by theorists to be the best one. But a possibility is the so-called JADE algorithm. So I did the same thing with the JADE algorithm. And here's the next to leading order answer. Here's the full answer. Here's just with partons. And what you can see is the algorithm is working fine for Y cut bigger than 0.05 or something like that. But when Y cut gets to be smaller, one, the whole thing gets to be pretty non-perturbative because the three jet fraction gets to be almost one. But furthermore, all the hadronization's having big effects. And just because it's a different jet algorithm, basically the meaning of Y cut, if you might think of it that way, is different. So you find out in this investigation, you might say, what's the difference? What's the effect of hadronization on different jet algorithms? You can just investigate that whole question at next leading order. So here's a conclusion slide. What do I think is going to happen with all of this? To my mind, next to leading order calculations ought to include showers. And after some number of years, I should think they will. And it seems to me that it's the responsibility of the authors of next to leading order programs to do it, to put the showers in. And what you have to do is put the showers in just the first level of splittings after the hard interaction. You don't need to do it higher enough for every splitting, because the further splittings with small virtuality are things that happen at later time. They're not hard, and you can just let whatever Monte Carlo program do them. So you can just let Pythia and Herwig do the rest of these showers represented here. In the example I showed you, the program did its own showering. It's actually not so hard to write a parton shower program. But I think it's really better to let Pythia do it. And I'm working with Steve Morena to put a partially developed shower into Pythia and let Pythia do the rest. Pythia's not designed for that. And the Lesueche Accord for doing that didn't really contemplate this sort of thing, so it's not sufficient. So there's a little work that needed to be done for that. Also, this whole business is special to electron positron annihilation so far, and furthermore, for reasons of conceptual simplicity, it's done here in Coulomb gauge, but probably people don't want to do that. So Zoltan Nagy and I are working on generalizing this whole business to doing these things within Feynman gauge calculation using the dipole subtraction scheme, which is what most people use, and just turning those dipole subtractions into the Sudikoff exponentials that initiate a shower. I have some more slides, but unless I have questions, I won't do them.
Okay, so thank you for that. We have time for some questions.
Well, just a comment that in Pythia, the hadronization is parameterized. The parameters are fit to data. Mm-hmm. The fit to data depends on what you choose for the exact parton shower algorithm. So at some stage, to make a program useful, all those parameters have to be, for example, refit to the LEP data. And I wonder if...
Oh, I hope not. What I did was, in this example, took the cutoff on when showers stop to be 1 GeV, which is the what's used internally in Pythia.
So for example, when you showed the mass distribution,
yes.
Presumably the discrepancy, so I assume that the Pythia out of the box is fit to the LEP data with the Pythia shower algorithm.
Yes.
And the discrepancy is quite likely correctable by changing the hadronization parameters. And so to make this thing useful to experimenters, someone eventually has to do that.
It depends on how accurate you want it to be. I should think it's already useful to experimenters to have, in a generic next to leading order program, something that fits better than a delta function times minus infinity.
Yeah.
But if it would be possible to really, you know, adjust all the parameters. My hope is that there's not much adjustment needed, particularly if you only do the inside part of the showering and let Pythia handle the rest of it. But that remains to be seen, is a good point.
Okay, any more? Well, we still have a couple of minutes if you want to show an extra slide. Yes, well, maybe not.
Let me, in 5 minutes I could show you how this actually works, but I think I'm not going to.
Okay, thanks very much, Dave.